We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
This is Focus, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. Harriet Williamson is producer for the program, and Jason Croft is at the controls this morning. In this part of Focus, we will be inviting your questions about the state university's retirement system. We are now at a point where there are a lot of questions about the system and its future, and people who participate in it wonder about how things may change. Now, this is something we have been following. We will continue to follow, I'm sure. But we thought it would be a good thing to create an opportunity here for people who are current or future retirees to ask questions about the system. In fact, anybody who has questions about the state university retirement system can call in and ask that question. And we have two guests here in the studio with us to help out. Angela Lieb has over 22 years' experience with CSRS. And throughout her career, she's served in various roles. She's been a benefits counselor, an insurance representative, and since 2007, September, she's been director of the Member Services Division. Bill Mabe is the executive director of CSRS. He's had that job since June of 2010, so June of last year. He came to CSRS with 30 years of experience in both the private and public sector. And I think between the two of them, we ought to be able to answer a lot of questions. Maybe I'll just say right here at the beginning that if people have very specific questions about their own situation, probably we can't do that on this show. But there are a lot of very nice folks at CSRS whose job it is to do just that. So, you know, if you have questions about your participation in the system, don't hesitate to get on the phone and call CSRS and make an appointment to go there and talk with someone. They'll be happy to do that. But we'll also do what we can in terms of answering questions here this morning with the two of them. And we're very pleased they could be here. So the questions are welcome. And here's the numbers, like always, here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. And if you would like to email your question, you can do that. That's will-talk@illinois.edu. Well, thank you both very much for being here. Well,
thank you.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. We thought, I talked a little bit with Mr. Mabe yesterday that maybe it might be a good idea to take a minute or two here to just say a couple of things generally, a kind of a thumbnail sketch for people who might not be very sure what exactly the state university's retirement system is and how it's set up. So why don't you do that?
Great, David. Thank you. What I'd just start out with is maybe give us a kind of a high-level or 50,000-foot look at CSRS and what it's all about. It is large public retirement system, one of the larger ones in the country, one of the largest ones in the country. We have about $14 billion in assets under management. We have just a little over 200,000 members participating in CSRS. Some basic benefit plans that are very, very common benefit plans, or a traditional defined benefit plan, what we call a portable benefit plan, and we have a self-managed plan, which is a defined contribution plan. The system itself, in terms of we've had this year, in terms of investments, we've had a good year in terms of our investment returns. I think we're running around 28% up year to date on our investment return. That's been really good. In terms of our portfolio, we're probably 68% in equities, 24% in fixed income, and 8% in other kinds of assets. We have an operating budget of about $12 million. We have 120 employees. We serve about 68 employers. We pay out about $1.6 billion in benefits every year. We get roughly 200 retirement applications a month on average, about 200 applications a month. We do about 400 counseling visits a month for the retirement system. So it's a large system. It's a in terms of one other thing I make sure I mention, our funding ratio is around 47% now. So,
what does that mean?
That means, in other words, the assets we have to pay the liabilities. In other words, we have $30 billion in liabilities, and we have roughly $14 billion in assets to pay those. Okay. So it's a large plan. It's we've had good investment returns. We deliver good customer service, and we're trying to address all the challenges that almost all the other public pension plans are having to address right now. If you look across the country, sirs, like many pension plans, both private and public sector pension plans have all been suffering in terms with funding, their funding levels because of the financial crisis that took place in 2008.
Yeah.
Most all those funds are recovering and coming back and getting stronger. But all the pension plans are facing challenges. And Illinois, like many of the other public plans, are facing challenges. We have a little bit more of a challenge. But they're all facing challenges.
Yeah. Well, certainly this is something that's well known and has been extensively reported on, not just in Illinois, but across the country, as you say. And here in the state of Illinois, we have the unfortunate distinction of having the most underfunded pension system in the entire country. And although there are other states that are similarly challenged, and I think that the thing that most concerns people is the soundness of the system. And the bottom line question, I'm sure that it's on a lot of people's minds, is when on that day comes when I, say, University of Illinois employee, retire, will the system be there and will I receive the benefit that I'm expecting?
Right. I think the death of the public pension systems has been overstated. People can rely on they're getting their pension payments. The funding levels is not where it should be, but you know over the near term, even if nothing changes about the pension system, everyone will receive their benefit. You'd like to see the funding ratios actually started to improve over the last year or so. It had declined steadily over the last 10 years. It started somewhat of a decline, around 2000, and it's been declining over the last decade. And at a low point, it was around 40%, and now it's back up, as I indicated. So there has been a decline, and it is recovering. The real key to the sustainability of the pension system is the regular, systematic, disciplined funding of the pension plan. The reason that the funding that the plan is underfunded, and this has been well documented, is because there has not been that disciplined funding of the pension plan. It isn't because the benefits are overly generous, because the benefits are about average with what other public pension plans are paying. The benefits aren't generous because, on average, the monthly benefit for someone is around $2,800. It isn't overly generous because these people don't get Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
And most people forget that this is their Social Security. So the key, to this whole thing, sustainability of the pension plan, is those systematic annual required contributions the state has to make. This year we submitted a request for $980 million to fund the plan. That's the state employer contribution. And so that's the what's called the certification amount. That's what we request the state to pay this year. We received the House Bill 116 was passed, and that authorized payment of that. So we should be giving the money on a sustained basis. But it's the history of those unpaid contributions that's really created the problem, not the benefit side.
Mm-hmm. Well, is it possible to answer a question like this? Because I think also it's important for people to know, and maybe obviously in the interest of full disclosure, I should say I'm in the system everybody in this building is in the system, so we're all in the system. So I'm not can't exactly be objective about this, but I think that people need to understand that if you participate in the system, every time you get paid, some money comes out of your paycheck and goes into CSRS, and it's not something we're required to participate. It's not a matter of choice. So when the time comes that the person retires, part of what they get back is that money that was taken out of their paycheck every month. So if you look at how much money the person is getting back that they paid in and how much money is – how that is supplemented by money from the state, from general state revenues, what is that ratio?
Well, generally the employee makes an 8% contribution. And employees make that religiously. They actually don't have a choice.
Yeah, right.
It comes right out of your paycheck. The state contribution, and that 8% represents what's called part of the normal cost of funding the pension. The state has a normal cost, which is the part that they're supposed to pay. And I believe it was around 10% is the normal cost that matches the employee 8% contribution. The additional cost contribution that's required for the state to make is on top of that is another of actually 14% this year, which is for those past obligations that they didn't pay when they didn't make contributions. Mm-hmm. So the state is paying – the employees are paying 8%. The state's paying roughly 10% of the normal cost, and that's actually going down over time with the new benefit structure. And then there's an additional contribution that's made for the past sins. So in total, it might be as much as 24% in terms of contribution. But 8% for employees, roughly 10% for the state's contribution for the regular ongoing cost of the pension. Mm-hmm. That's essentially what's going into the system on a regular basis. Yeah.
And if I could just break that down a little bit, of the 8% that employees pay in, 6.5% is what we call normal contributions, which is the portion that goes towards retirement. They're also paying in 1% to fund a survivor benefit if they're in the traditional plan, or that 1% goes for portability if they're in the portable plan, and then that additional 0.5% of the original 8 goes towards funding automatic annual increases. So just so we're clear that it's not the full 8% going towards the monthly retirement benefit, but 6.5% of that.
All right. Well, we have a couple of callers, and that's really what we're about here. The hope is, my interest is providing an opportunity here for people to call in and ask questions about the state university's retirement system here in Illinois and how it works. Perhaps also we can talk about the possibility that things will change. No one really knows exactly what is likely to change, but I think it's expected there will be some changes. We can engage in some speculation on that and take whatever questions you have. And again, our guests here are Angie Lieb. She's Director of Member Services, and William Mabe. He's the Executive Director of the State University's Retirement System. And we have a couple callers here ready to go. First, over in Belgium, near Danville, line 4. Hello.
Hello, and good morning. I have a question as to not precisely on the university system, but the greater teacher system that's involved, you know, the public teachers, they have a very similar sounding system. Should they be as concerned as you folks are about your system?
If you're referring to there are other public systems in Illinois, the teacher retirement system.
Yes, exactly. That's the one I'm talking about.
Right. I think that they have all the same concerns. I think they are in a very similar situation. They're addressing those concerns. I don't want to speak for TRS, but we're all in. As I indicated when I, opened up my opening comments, that all the public systems are struggling with the funding, and a large part of that has been driven by the markets, the crash we had in 2008, and then another part of it has been, as I indicated, just the disciplined funding. But they are as concerned. They're working just as hard to make sure that the benefits will be there for people.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Over to Urbana and a caller on line one. Hello.
Hi. Hmm? I came in recently, so if you've addressed this, I'm sorry. I understand that there's going to be a meeting of the Board of CSRS on the 10th of June, at which they're going to make some decisions as a result of the five-year usual decision that they make to adjust the benefit that they did a year early because of that market crash, I understand. And I suppose I have a couple of questions about that. Do you have any sense of what that decision might be and how soon after that June 10th meeting will people in the system know what that is and be able to evaluate that?
Thank you. Yes, there will be a the board will is taking under advisement right now the decision about the, when to implement the changes in the money purchase factors,
mm-hmm.
and they will make a decision in June 10th, and we will notify everyone immediately after that board meeting as when the effective date of those changes are.
So I think the 10th is a Friday, so by the following week.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Be able to know that and make decisions based on that. do you anticipate that that will have a strong effect on what people decide to do as far as when to retire? If it does affect, I also understand that there's a question about whether those changes would take place January 1st of 2012 or July of 2012. I understand that July 1 is the usual cutoff for the fiscal year, but that it might be January.
I think the board is going to have they're going to make a decision on in terms of the timing on that. They're getting a lot of input mm-hmm. from a lot of folks about in other words the what their preferences are around the implementation date. They'll study that information and they'll take it seriously and they'll make a decision, and they'll weigh what they have to weigh is they have to balance their fiduciary responsibilities to the pension fund versus being sensitive to the needs of participants, and so as well as the university and colleges in terms of the academic year and the timing and that sort of thing. So they're going to take that all under consideration and give it a lot of thought. They're very sensitive to all these issues. They're very aware of all these issues. They've been gathering information. They're all we've been sharing it with them information and input that we've received from all of the various stakeholder groups on that. So they're very concerned about it. They're very understanding of the issue, and I think they'll make a decision, and we'll make sure we communicate it quickly.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks. Sure. Well, this is something that I wanted to make sure we talk about. I'm a little confused about it. I imagine other people are too. Maybe for a lot of people, the bottom line, though, is that this – the change you're talking about, this has to do with how it is you figure what a person's monthly benefit is. And the concern that some people have is that, well, maybe I was thinking I would get X amount of dollars, and now it looks like I'm going to be getting less than X amount of dollars. But also figuring into this has if you are close to retirement, when you decide to do that can make a difference. And I don't know if Angie, can you try to explain this now?
Sure. Yes, there is. There are two formulas that are most commonly used to determine a person's benefit. And what we are speaking about is the money purchase formula, which, as Bill mentioned earlier, in the traditional and portable plan, these are defined benefit plans. But the money purchase formula acts more like a defined contribution plan within a defined benefit plan. And so it's looking at the dollars in your account, the employer match, your age at retirement. So when we change interest rates or these money purchase factors, they do affect the benefit. What I always try to educate people when they are looking at retirement, they always have the guarantee. And that defined benefit formula is sort of the floor. And that is that they would get, you know, 2.2% for each year of service that they have. And so always look to that, but know that this defined contribution plan may provide a little better benefit, but there are so many unknowns. Just like in this situation, if I was looking at retiring 10 years from now and I'm using current factors and the current assumed rate, a lot can change between now and then. But my general formula calculation is not going to change. It's going to be the 2.2%. So,
and for the reason I think it's particularly significant could be for somebody, say you're thinking about retiring within the next year.
Right.
That you might possibly want to think about, can you hang in there just a little bit longer, that might make a big difference.
Right. People that are looking at retiring the next year, if they are currently working, we are anticipating that they will need to work about 10 or 11 months longer to get back to where they were before the factors changed. Our inactive participants, which are those members that have left their funds on deposit with us but have not yet begin to draw an annuity, theirs takes a little bit longer. It's about 12 to 14 months. But if someone isn't looking at retiring in the next year, say if they're looking 3-4 years down the road, the impact on them isn't going to be as great. Yes, the benefit is going to be different, but you know, the impact for those looking to retire in the next year is much greater.
And does this also affect current retirees who are drawing a benefit now?
No.
No.
This
okay.
has no effect.
So that
effect
has nothing to do if,
nothing.
If you've retired and you, that's not something you need to worry about. This
exactly.
is primarily a concern for people who are thinking about retiring, as we say, like within the next year or so.
Right. Correct.
All right. Well, I hope that helps. Let's go to Muhammad for another caller here. Line number two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Two questions. Number one, could you elaborate a little bit on what are the most likely changes? You've elaborated on what is most likely time, or the questioner did. The second is, what about someone who is already vested, who has more than the minimum amount of years, perhaps on the traditional plan? When he retires, since he is still or she is still are still paying the retirement, there will be a lump sum refund of what is the overage over the annuity. The question is, before the change or after the change, will that make any difference as to that lump sum retirement of the overage? In other words, if the time is extended by actuarial computations, will that make any difference to this individual who is considering retirement? Would it make a difference whether he retires before the date or after the date? We'll hang up and listen. Do you understand
okay.
the question?
I just want to make sure before you hang up. I just want to make sure that we do, in case Angie say maybe wanted to ask you any additional questions.
I think I do understand the question.
Okay,
yeah.
Very good. So, well, thank you for the question. We'll see if we can get you an answer. Go
okay.
go for it.
The caller was referring to when someone has reached their maximum benefit. And again, under the defined benefit plan with the general formula, it's very easy for me to tell a member when they're going to reach their maximum benefit, which for most people is 80%. And that's because if you take 36.3636 years times 2.2%, you're going to get 80%. Under the money purchase formula, due to all the variables, that's a moving target. And so you're looking at a particular point in time, and you're looking at the person's what we call final rate of earnings, their average earnings during their highest 4 years or last 48 months, and you're determining when that person is at 80%. If they have changes such as this to the factors or to the interest rates or to their salaries, that 80% number moves. And as the caller indicated, once these factors go into place, it is going to extend the period of time in which we are looking to pay that benefit. So we are going to need more of those contributions to pay that benefit. And so if he had excess contributions before the implementation of the factors of, let's say, $100,000, and then after we implement the factors, we need $70,000 of that to pay the benefit, then there's a big change in the excess contributions. Now, those examples that I gave, I just want to make sure that people understand those were just examples. Each person is, you know, their situation is unique, so we would have to look at that.
Yeah. So one way or another, you're going to get that money back, but it sort of depends. And maybe, again, people need to understand the maximum benefit that anybody can receive is 80% of what they were making before. But if you've been in the system long enough, chances are you have paid in more than you can get based on 80% of your salary. You will get that money back, but it comes as a separate pot of money, which I guess you can elect to either have all at once, or it can be amortized over, you know, some period of time, and then they will add that into what you get every month.
That's correct.
All right. And again, that's the kind of thing that really, if you, somebody listening wants to know, well, specifically for them, what is it, you know, if I'm going to retire on this day, what am I going to get? If they, what they need to do is call and make an appointment with a counselor over at CSRS, and that person will sit down with them and we'll go over the figures and we'll say, well, what I can tell you right now, based on what we know right now, here you go. Here's what you're going to get.
Right. And I do want to encourage people also to visit our website, www.CSRS.org, because we do have an online benefit estimator that come the Monday morning after the board meeting should be updated with the factors and the date that the board has selected as the implementation date. So they can do those estimates themselves.
We have some other callers, and I promise we'll get to these folks. And I don't know what we can say in terms of likely changes, but the caller asked about that, and that's something that I was wanting to ask you about too. Again, given the financial condition of the state, it seems almost inevitable that there will be some changes, and that will affect perhaps people in a number of ways. Now, maybe all we can do is speculate at this point, but if one asks the question, what do you think is most likely to happen and how things might change, do you have a feeling about that?
Well, first I want to make sure that we split up what happened with money purchase versus what's happening with the state in general.
Right.
The money purchase was simply the process that we go through every 5 years, where the actuaries do the experience study. They look at all the demographics, you know, expected investment returns, that sort of thing. Also, plus mortality changes. One of the things I want to make sure people know about is that people are living longer. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the other driving factors in changing the money purchase factors. So that happens about every 5 years. So as far as the money purchase, what CSRS would do, that is related only to that.
No matter what was happening,
whatever
else was happening,
right,
you'd be doing that.
We'd be doing that.
Yeah.
And the other thing, it has that the change in the money purchase has nothing to do with the solvency or the security of the CSRS assets. Okay. I just want to make sure that we split that out. Okay. In terms of what's happening at the legislature, very unpredictable what's going to happen there. There's almost 50 different bills have been introduced into the legislature. Most of them aren't seeing a lot of action. Some are, and this is getting late in the session, and there's been a lot of work, a lot of interest in a couple of the bills. Whether they'll see the light of day or not, we really don't know. I think the one that's generating the most interest now is what was House Bill 149. That's the one that's sort of – there's a lot of people talking about, and I think people ought to probably pay attention to that particular one. But other than that, we had not really anticipated much change coming out of the legislature unless this one were to catch fire.
Right. And is this the one that essentially what it is that more money would come out of an individual's paycheck?
Yes. This is the one that people would be making an election and whether they wanted to stay in the current plan or they were moved to the defined contribution plan. And if they were to remain in the current plan, their contributions would increase and they could increase significantly depending on how many people move out of the current plan into the new plan. So that's the one. It's a very complex piece of legislation. It's requiring a lot of analysis. We're having our actuaries look at it, and our legal counsel is heavily involved in reviewing it. That's probably the one we're spending the most time on right now. Whether anything will really – any changes will happen, it's very hard to predict going forward.
Yeah. We are talking this morning in this hour of Focus about the State University's retirement system. We have some callers, so we'll continue our conversation after a short break. This is Focus.
Hi, I'm Kevin Kelly. Monty Python's Spamalot is a musical comedy lovingly ripped off from the film Monty Python and the Holy Grail. The show will play at Sangamon Auditorium in Springfield Tuesday night, and I'll talk with the man who plays Sir Dennis Galahad on the Tuesday edition of Live and Local. We'll also hear about Sunday's concert by the University of Illinois Alumni Band. Join me for Live and Local weekdays from noon to 1 on FM 90.9.
This is Focus. I'm David Inge. It's our morning talk show. We're here with 10 different topics every week. Tomorrow morning in the 10 o'clock hour, our guest will be journalist biographer Jenny Scott, and we'll talk about her new book that is a biography of Barack Obama's mother. The title of the book is A Singular Woman. And tomorrow in the 11 o'clock hour, Celeste Quinn will be talking with Cindy Laverty. She is a caregiver expert and author. They'll talk about her book, Caregiving, Elder Care Made Clear and Simple. And maybe just I'll mention one more show, just as we're talking about money issues this morning on the program. Friday morning at 10 o'clock, we'll have our monthly show on personal finance. David Sino will be here. He's a clinical professor of finance in the College of Business. And it's a regular opportunity we have on the program for people to ask questions about money management. So that's what we have up over the next couple of days. If you'd like to get the schedule for this week, see what's up for next week, listen to past programs, go to our website, WILL.illinois.edu. We have two guests here with us this morning, Angela Lieb. She is the director of the Member Services Division for the State University's retirement system and has worked for now over 20 years at CSRS. Bill Mabe, he's the executive director, and he's been in that position since June of last year. He came to CSRS with 30 years of experience both in the private and public sector. And we're just opening things up here to give people who are listening the chance to ask questions, basic questions about CSRS and how it works and how things may change in the months and years ahead. Of course, we don't really know, but that's something we'll try to keep on top of. And so give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Back to the phones. And our next caller is in Champaign and line one. Hello.
I hope this is I'm the right person here.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, well, here's my question. I'm thinking about retiring at the end of the next academic year, but this has to do with the money purchase formula. Is there any way that I could get less in retirement through the whole system if I retired next, you know, June 1st as opposed to January 1st?
It will depend on when those money purchase factors change and if your benefit was highest under the money purchase formula. If the change occurs in January and you retire in June, then yes, there is the potential that you could receive less in June of next year than you would have, you know, looking at December of this year. Again, it depends on when they are changed and what formula your benefit's highest under. I would encourage you to contact our office to maybe have an appointment if you haven't already done so to see what formula is highest for you.
Yeah, I'll be going in. I was concerned about that. This could be a real incentive for retiring earlier.
Yes.
Okay, well, thanks a lot.
All right, very good. On to somebody in Charleston. This is line number three. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Hi.
Yes.
Thank you for the program and for taking my call. I have a question about the contributions that they mentioned here for 8% contribution and the 10% from the state. But they mentioned that this is for the traditional and the portable. Those percentages apply for the self-management plan?
The 8% contribution rate does apply to members in the self-managed plan. The employer match is different on that. It's 7.6% with a 0.5% for disability benefits under the self-managed plan.
Okay. Another question is, I'm within the years of retirement, too. I have been advised to, because my, according to what they say, I have not enough to retire yet. So they refer me to the Social Security, and I went to the office there, and they say that there is the windfall elimination provision, and that they need to find out how much I'm going to be receiving to from the SORS office in order to tell me how much I will be receiving from Social Security.
Yes.
And so, I mean, this is money that I'm entitled to because it's money that I work. And I just think that that is not very fair to just not to receive the money that I work for.
Okay. Are you referring to the money under Social Security because
right.
of the offset? Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The Social Security Administration, they do offset benefits for members who are receiving retirement annuities from a public pension plan if they do not, the member does not have enough years under that of substantial employment. So, yes, we do understand that, but yeah, they do offset those benefits.
Huh. Well, okay. Thank you very much for answering my question.
All right. Bye-bye. Thank you. We have about 13 minutes left in this part of Focus, and we have some other callers. And again, I just want to encourage people, if you have questions about the State University's retirement system, that's what we're talking about here, 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. And you can also send an email to will-talk@illinois.edu. I don't know, was there anything else you wanted to mention, just in response to what the caller had to say?
She just prompted me to mention that members in the self-managed plan are not affected by the change in the money purchase factors. When she was asking about self-managed plan employees, I want to make that clear, too, that this affects only those members in the traditional or portable plan.
Now, the self-managed plan, this is something that's a relatively recent addition. How long has that been an option?
1998 is when the three planned choices came into existence.
So that, I remember at that point it was being offered, and it's sort of the question was maybe how long had you been in, and if you'd been in a real long time under the old plan, it probably made sense for you to stay under the old plan. And if you were just coming in, then at least it was something to think about that you could participate in some of these other plans. How do you know roughly the breakdown of how many people are in each of these plans?
I have the latest statistics here, and I don't know, Bill, if you had those numbers.
Well, right now, I believe there's 10,000 people in active members in the self-managed plan, and about 5,000 inactive members in the self-managed plan, so roughly 15,000 total members. And I think we have about $900 million in assets that are assigned to the self-managed plan.
Okay.
And there's a couple of different options, you know, under that investment options. They have the Fidelity and TIAA-CREF, I believe, and Principal is the annuity provider for the self-managed plan. And they're, it's a good defined contribution plan, and I think folks might have thought there might have been more movement into the defined contribution plan, but it appears that most people really default into the defined benefit plan and when they sign up, as opposed to actively selecting one plan over the other.
Yeah.
And Bill was right on with those numbers. The active participants, we have 10,751, and our inactive, we have 5,280, or approximately 13% of SERS active membership.
Okay, so that's relative. So
yeah.
You're talking about you have over 200,000 members, so this is really a pretty small percentage
right.
of the total.
Right.
There's, in terms of participants, about 48,000 active or annuitants, and then about 72,000-73,000 active and inactive members.
Yeah.
What the interesting change has been is the inactives have grown over time, while the actives and the annuitants have stayed about the same.
Okay, we have some other callers. Next in line would be Champagne, and line number two. Hello.
Yeah, I have two questions. I'm trying to understand my wife's. She she's a participant, or she's in the system, and trying to understand her situation better. We had the meeting with CSRS, and it's clear that any kind of unused vacation that you have when you're going to retire gets figured into your final rate of earnings. And I wanted to know, is that also true for unused sick leave?
Unused sick leave is a little different. As you indicated, the unused vacation is considered earnings for CSRS purposes, and 8% does come out of that. The unused sick leave, any sick leave that you do not receive payment for from your employer is reported to CSRS, and you will receive additional service credit for that. So it doesn't really have earnings, unless it was part of collectively bargained sick leave, which is a little different. But for most people, the unused sick leave equates to additional service.
Yeah, so it doesn't. But if she is paid for unused sick leave, then does that affect the final rate of earnings?
No,
that for
most
people,
no. The payout for sick leave for most people will not affect the final rate of earnings. There are some employers that have what is called collectively bargained sick leave. It's a small percentage of the overall employer base. So for most people, no, that would not equate to
earnings. Then my other question has to do with the, it appears after all that's said and done, she passed on the early retirement program that they had going at the U of I last year, I guess it was, and last year. And it seems that she's taken a huge hit now because she's not only lost that bonus that they were offering, but now her excess contributions, if she were to retire in the near term, would also be taken, would also have been reduced quite a lot. And I'm wondering if I've got the correct read of what actually happened.
Okay. First of all, in response to the U of I's retirement program, that had no effect on the CSRS account to begin with, because contributions would not have been taken from that because it was considered an early retirement incentive. So yes, she was out the loss of funds by getting that from the university, but her CSRS benefit was not affected. And again, depending on the implementation date of the change in the money purchase factors will determine if there was a change in that excess contribution amount that she's entitled to receive.
Well, yeah, but I mean, like when these new factors go in, all she can do is work longer to get back to where she was, say 12/31 of this year, as far as excess contributions, and she's permanently lost that money. Any way you look at it, she's just working her way back up. Correct?
Well, yeah. Is she looking at retiring next year, I assume?
Yes, she could.
Yeah. So then what that's indicating is that when they looked at the overall demographics and that they're living longer and that it's going to take more money to pay that benefit, yes, she's going to receive that in the additional month, or I'm sorry, in the monthly annuity instead of in the excess contributions. But yeah, it's going to be spread out over her lifetime, which that is changing.
But what you're saying is the monthly annuity costs more, you know, just because she crossed the date rather than, you know, she's not getting any more benefits. It just costs more.
Right.
She totally lost, you know, a certain amount of money. But at any rate, I get the picture. Thank you very much.
Uh-huh. Thank you. But again, that's if people are making they're weighing their options and thinking about retiring within the next year, that's something that they might want to take into consideration. And it sounds like for some people, if they possibly can work, and it wouldn't even mean working another year, if you however many months that was, if you can possibly do that, then that should ameliorate the effect of this change.
Right. And Bill had mentioned earlier that this is something that does occur every 5 years. So this isn't something new. It's every 5 years these factors are evaluated. So
okay. All right. Let us go to, I think we have our Muhammad, an earlier caller from Muhammad wanted to do a follow-up. Maybe we'll go to line number three. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yeah, as you can see, I'm thinking very hard. I think that your discussion or explanation of potential changes was a little bit skimpy. I heard something about a possible cap of, say, something over $100,000 on payments. You might comment on that. The second question that I have, I keep hearing money purchase or traditional. Is it money purchase or traditional two different things, or money purchase and traditional the same thing, and only they're called different names? And I'll hang up and listen, unless okay. You have a question for
the money purchase is very much like a, not to add another term in here, is almost like a very similar to a guaranteed variable annuity, where you have a guaranteed level of benefit that is calculated, that is the floor, and you gain the benefit of investment returns and that sort of thing through the money purchase. In other words, you can there's an upside to being in money purchase, but there's always a floor with a guaranteed benefit. So I guess what that it is, there are just different ways of calculating it, and it allows you to win, so to speak, if the market does well and the factors are good. But you always have a guaranteed benefit, so you get the better of the deals, whichever one is better. And if you pay in more than 80%, you're going to get it back. So, but Angie, maybe I think you wanted to comment.
Yeah, and this is not something that a member has to choose. We will do these calculations for members at retirement, and whichever one is higher is the one that they receive. And to address the caller's question about traditional and money purchase and portable and defined benefit, the money purchase is a formula that is used under the traditional and portable plans. And the other formula that the money purchased is compared to is the general formula calculation, which the one I was talking about earlier, for each year of service you get 2.2%. So the overall plan name is traditional, portable, or self-managed. And then the money purchase and the general formula are retirement calculations.
Okay. Well, I hope that helps. We have a couple of other calls. We'll try to get them in the time that remains. Next is Champagne in line one, I believe. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I want to come at it a slightly different angle. In the follow-up to the teacher's retirement, I hope you weren't in any way meaning to imply that the major reason for the underfunding of pensions, such as CSRS and the teacher's fund, is the markets, because it's quite clear that the major reason for this happening has been the systematic, more or less, raiding of the pension fund by the state in order to fund current costs and cover its deficit. And then I think that raises the question of what is the possible recourse for someone who is 5, 10, or 15 years away from retirement. And it would seem to me that they need to be involved in some kind of political action to pressure the legislature to restructure the tax system so that the pensions can be properly funded. Because as long as revenue continues to be less than expenditure, the pension funds are going to remain in big difficulty. And I don't think it's really possible for people to just sit back and hope that the legislature does something. But I think they actually need to take some kind of action to try to guarantee their pensions in the future. I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Right. Yeah, I certainly didn't mean to imply that the market caused the underfunding of the pension plan. There is just a long history, systematic history of failure to fund the plans adequately. That's factual. It's out there, and there's plenty of evidence to support that. But that was complicated by the recent downturns in the market. It made a bad situation worse. Mm-hmm. And so we've been fortunate that we have had a good run over the last 18 months or so to regain some of those market losses. But in no way was I trying to suggest that the cause of the funding status being as a result of the marketplace. The market the market just hit all of the funds equally hard. The funding status of most pension plans is directly correlated with the discipline of funding. We only have to look around here in Illinois. That a good example of that is IMRF, which is a public fund out of Chicago that is almost, I think, 80 or 90% funded. And it is that they are funded because they had disciplined funding and their employers paid their premiums or paid their contributions when due. So the caller is correct in terms of why we are in the pickle we're in.
And it's certainly worth making the point, and it's not just me making this point, but people who have studied it make the point that this issue of underfunding is something that goes back decades.
Absolutely.
And if you're interested in who to blame, you may take your choice. There is a wide variety of people, both Republicans and Democrats, that have participated in this. So it's been an issue of long standing, and it just sort of built and built and built, and was just made with the downturn in the market, just made the whole thing that much worse.
It just brought it to light.
Yeah.
It just illustrated the problem.
Yeah. We're just about at the point we're going to have to finish here, and my apologies. I think we have a caller that we're not going to be able to take because we simply don't have time. What I will suggest is that we'll continue to follow these things, and my hope is that either our two guests here or some other folks from CSRS can come back and visit with us. You know, maybe in 6 months from now, we'll have a better idea what's going on. In the meantime, of course, if people are interested in finding out, talking with somebody about their own particular situation, they're thinking about when they're going to retire, the thing to do is call over there at CSRS and make an appointment, right?
Yes.
and there are folks there would be very happy to sit down and go over the numbers and help people make that decision. So is there anything, last little thing you'd just like to leave with folks before we finish up?
I would say I just leave with them the idea that the fund is secure, that I wouldn't be overly worried, but I would pay attention.
All right. Well, there we'll finish up, again, with the promise that we'll try and stay on top of this, and we'll give you some more opportunities to ask questions in the future as we move along. Our guest, Bill Mabe, he's the executive director of the State University's Retirement System, and Angela Lieb, she's director of the Member Services Division. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.